WIOX is supported by Margaretville Hospital and Mountainside Residential Care Center, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, offering compassionate care at a CMS nursing home. More information at 845-586-1800. WIOX is supported by Pika Moose Restaurant on Route 28 in Big Indian, with a takeout menu available for pickup between 5 and 8 p.m. Wild mushroom risotto, oven-roasted Snowdance farm chicken, slow-braised beef short ribs, sautéed kale with almonds, warm honey-glazed beets, and more. Pika Moose Takeout, 845-254-6500, 845-254-6500, or pikamooserestaurant.com. WIOX is supported by Catskill Mountain Cleaning, specializing in Airbnbs, vacation homes, and private residences. Cleaning, firewood stack, trash removal, and small pest exterminating. Serving the Catskills region, including Margaretville, Andes, Bovina, and the surrounding area. More information at 607-261-1674 or CatskillMountainCleaning.com.
Hi, this is Carol Seitz, host of The Rabbit Hole, Monday mornings at 10 on WIOX Roxbury, live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, WIOXradio.org, and MTC Cable Channel 20.
Okay, you're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. If you like what you hear, you can also get WIOX on any smart device through the FM radio apps. This is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but I got Catskill Forest Association's Board President Mike Porter with me. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on, Mike.
It's been a strange time, but we'll get through it.
I think so.
Yeah.
We have to.
Yeah, we do.
And so what have you been up to before we get into the meat of the show?
I've been trying to catch up on firewood for this coming winter. I had my knee surgery in the fall last year, and I didn't get any wood cut, so I've been busting my hump to cut firewood.
Yeah.
And I've been doing a little sawmilling.
Yeah.
And a little helping Becky with her projects. She made a deer exclosure, and she's cleaning up around a stone wall. So I do what I can to help out when I get my fun stuff done.
Yeah. No kidding.
And I've been writing some articles, or letters. I call them letters for CFA, which I think we'll talk a little bit about tonight. But it's been, it's very different. I miss coffee break. But other than that, I'm I've been retired 16 years, so what I'm doing now is basically what I've done for the last 16 years.
Yeah.
Except coffee break.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, well, like most people, probably spending more time with family and stuff. Yeah. So, been metal detecting.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. And you found a rifle ball or something the other
musket
day.
Ball, yeah.
Well, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, down the Rondout Valley. So, given where it was and the historical context of where it was, it's over 250 years old.
Wow.
A lot of bullets out in the woods, though. Man.
Yeah.
A lot of casings. You find mostly bullets and nails.
Yeah.
And aluminum cans. But this was, you know... I took a look at it, and I said, geez, it looks like lead, but it's big, and it looks like it was a ball. And then as I'm driving away, I see a New York State historical sign saying it was a training ground for the Revolutionary War and French and Indian Wars.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, okay.
Guess that's it.
And you look it up online, as you can with almost anything these days, and people, of course, have many images of musket balls from the 1700s and identical. Because it colors a certain way with oxidation and stuff. So it has a distinct color. I don't know if it's a particular lead they used or not, but it looked identical.
Yeah.
So pretty neat.
So how much bigger was it than a deer rifle slug in terms of diameter?
I don't know. I want to say it was like a half inch or so.
Wow.
It was pretty big. Yeah. And it was smushed, so it hit something.
Yeah. Just can't imagine what that must have felt like to these old soldiers and people. Get hit with one of them.
Oh, man. Yeah.
No wonder there were a lot of people with no legs and arms and dead. Yeah. Jeez.
It's pretty cool to find something that old, though, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it predates the country.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
You know?
A guy was in our front yard and found a penny from 1893 in our front yard right in Margaretville.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. I didn't throw it there.
No.
So it's just been there waiting for somebody to find it.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I've been doing some firewood myself, just trying to get ahead of it for next year and the year after. But as many of us have, there's white ash on the ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can swarm that like a turkey buzzard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Speaking of buzzards, you see the buzzards flying over just down the road from here, coming into town today.
I didn't see him.
There was about 15 of them. I says, oh, I better look alive.
Look alive.
That's my that's my little phrase when I see vultures. Okay, everybody, look alive.
Yeah. And I saw some, I was in Sullivan County, and for the second time, I saw deer browse on Norway spruce.
Really?
Those are some hungry deer.
They are hungry.
White pine and Norway spruce browsed up to 5 feet.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, that's really odd. Those are starvation foods.
Oh, yeah.
But the ground has been so open. It must be everything's just gone.
Yeah, true. It's over by Swan Lake.
Huh.
I looked in my mailbox at the radio station here at WIOX, and I see there's a letter from Alan, if you're listening. He wanted to know the song that was played during when we interviewed Lager and his son, Paul Crickon, and Paul Crickon Jr. And, you know, I can't think of the name right now, but it was Used Logging Truck, if you're listening. It was not by Johnny Cash, but Used Logging Truck. And I got to get back to you with the name. So, I don't know. I just have a letter in my mailbox. Yeah. So you might be listening.
I always find it interesting what you pick for music.
Yeah.
A lot of times I say, how did he find that?
I don't know. Well, iTunes is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I guess it is.
So, you know, you can search stuff. But tonight's topic is outdoor education with Catskill Forest Association Board President Mike Porter. And, Mike, you want to describe what you've been doing with these letters to the membership of the Catskill Forest Association?
Well, I started – Becky suggested I date these things. So on March 17th, I said, you know what? We're all housebound or bound somehow, and there's a lot of second homeowners that are here, and – one thing that all CFA members have in common is they have some kind of trees. That's why they're members of CFA, whether they have 5 acres or 2 acres or 2,000 acres. So I thought, you know, maybe if there are people that are stuck at home, they've got their kids, maybe they need things to do or things to talk about with their kids in the woods. So I wrote a letter, and I used to teach environmental science, and I did a nature class with a bunch of seniors. They had a really good time with it. That was way back. And I got to thinking, you know, maybe this is something I should do every week. And I'd send the things out to Dorothy at CFA to put them out, and she started getting comments from people that were really enjoying it. I said, well, maybe I'll keep doing it. So I got to a point where I'm thinking, what am I going to do next? So I talked to my daughter. I sent her a copy of what I've done. She says, Dad, why don't you do a scavenger hunt? You always did scavenger hunts for us, and they were always fun. So I said, that's a good idea. So I came up with a bunch of nature things for a scavenger hunt, and that went out. And CFA is going to give little trinkets to people that complete it by the end of the spring season. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. I've got a lot of really positive comments. In fact, a friend of mine who's a fairly new member said, my wife and I are having a blast with that scavenger hunt. We got four things yet to find. And there are some things that aren't out yet. So
yeah,
you got to keep looking.
I went and did it with my daughter, Meta, and we found most of them. Some things weren't out. Yeah. Service berries were easy to find. They're fully flowered where I am.
Are they? They're not here.
And yeah. So.
No apple blossoms yet, right?
No apple blossoms.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'll give people things to do for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And then she said, Dad, do something about your earth science. You taught her science, and you drilled it into us. So in 2 weeks, I've actually got 2 weeks ahead now. My letter is, so what about your stone wall? And it's basically going to be a hard rock geology history of the Catskills and how those stones came to be. Hmm. I thought that, you know, people don't know those stone walls were not built in the woods, you know? So we start with that. I said, there, now you learned something. I'm giving it away. But then I talked about the erosion of the Acadian Mountains and the Catskill Delta and then the uplift and the Catskill Plateau and all that.
Yeah.
So that's coming up.
Hmm. That's the that white rock, too, from Acadia. That's what formed, supposedly, I remember reading, the Shangam Ridge, the Shawangunk Ridge near New Paltz.
Yeah, comes so from there's a lot of stuff. And the limestone bedrock deep down in that formed the Howes Cavern and all that, that was the ocean bottom at one time. And then it filled in, became a delta, and we have all of our sediments that are all nice, basically horizontal structures. So it was fun. And I double checked some of my stuff because, you know, in 16 years you can forget something.
Yeah.
But I really, really enjoyed Dr. Titus and his books. So I'm kind of a disciple of his. I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it was fun. But I've done several different things. I like birds. So I've got one coming up on birds. I did one on a rainy day activity, and like going to feeder cams and nest cams where they're online, they're live, where you can watch eagles raising their young or birds eating at a bird feeder in different parts of the country. I think actually there's Ithaca and Ontario. And then they've got some tropical stuff, an albatross nest. So yeah. I put those out there. I said, so people can... they can, at their leisure, go through, and they've got the website. All they got to do is click on it, and it opens up. And it's been good. I always enjoy doing that with students. So I might just well be doing it with students who are a wide variety of ages.
You know? Well, yeah, there's plenty of kids home now.
Yeah, there are.
So they're not at school, and there and, they are. They got, most of them have land, whether it's, you know, just a postage stamp or a few acres, you know.
One of my neighbors up at our camp, I stopped one day. I did some backhoe work for her. And she came out with her daughter and says, we're going looking for garlic mustard. And they picked enough garlic mustard for a salad.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things on the scavenger hunt. So she was getting into it. And their kids were getting into it. And that really, you know, that makes you feel good that, wow, I did something right. Because as a teacher, we didn't necessarily do things right, you know? We were always under the gun.
Garlic mustard, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, Becky's had that. Several salads of it this year already.
Yeah, I used to make garlic mustard pesto.
Yeah, I've heard that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It is. I haven't done it in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, do it before it goes to seed.
Yeah.
Then it gets kind of bitter.
Yeah.
Now's the time.
It is. It's beautiful right now, and there's lots of it.
Hell yeah.
It's taken over everywhere.
Yeah, so what, you know, what's going on in the woods right now, Mike?
Some of the early spring wildflowers are starting to show up. You know, it's been snowless for so long that we've been waiting for the, they call them the ephemerals, the ones that come up before the leaves come on.
Yeah.
And mostly around our camp, they're coming on now. You see them periodically. But the spring ephemerals are coming out. The overwintering birds are starting to move a little bit, and some of the ones that are going to go north are going to migrate. Some of the blue jays that have been so plentiful are going to move north.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. And the robins are singing, and the cardinals are singing. It's real quiet through the winter, so you don't hear birds. But first of March or so, actually about the 10th of March, the robins start and the cardinals start. And
yeah.
So a lot of birds are starting to sing. There's been some nesting starting.
Yeah, and down at in the Rondout Valley at around 200 feet near the stream or the creek, squirrel corn was out, flower.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, fully flowered out.
Huh. We've got a couple of lady slippers at camp that we know where they are, and they come up pretty much every year. And Becky wants to fence one that is in a bad spot for what some of our plans are so that we don't wreck it. So we're looking for that to come up, but we haven't seen it yet.
They're mowing lawns down in Kingston.
Yeah.
Yeah. You believe that? People I went to down Stone Ridge this morning mowed their lawn already.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
That's amazing.
I try to put that off as long as I can.
I know, me too. Yeah. Middle of May, maybe at the end of May.
Then it becomes a haying project, though.
Yeah.
You got to rake it, or you got to push it around for the rest of the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah,
that's what happens.
No kidding. Yeah, my peach tree's flowering out.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Fully flowered, which is not good because I think they're going to get killed.
Yeah, tonight's going to be real cold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My pear trees are starting to bud.
Yeah.
And my neighbor says, oh, I love that apple tree. I says, that's not an apple tree. So the joke is Norma's apple tree. It's a pear tree between our driveways, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So we give her a few pears and she's really happy. But that's coming along nice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think I saw a morel too.
Did you really?
Yeah, down the Rondout Valley. Hmm. Yeah, morels are coming up. Trout lilies are definitely up. That's another green, like garlic mustard, you can use in salads, yeah. Whatnot. Leeks, saw some leeks. They're up. Yeah,
ramps, I think we're still on the edge of that. It's just not happening yet.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're up in Andy's. We found some.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't have leeks at my place, so who am I to talk?
Yeah, it was over in Fall Clove.
Oh, okay.
And right in the middle of the apple orchard. Hmm. There was some. It's kind of weird.
That is weird.
You know, deer are starting to change their coats, but, bird migrations,
they're starting.
Yeah.
Yeah. The early spring migrants are here. The bluebirds are here. The red-winged blackbirds and the common grackles and the cowbirds, are back. I saw chipping sparrows the other day, white-throated sparrows. Not too long from now, the rose-breasted grosbeaks should be coming back. In fact, I've stopped putting feed out. I had a visitor, took my suet feeder.
Who's that?
Big Bruin.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I have a seed feeder that's high enough up. It's the high canopy bird feeder you put up.
Yeah.
I'm going to put some seed in that because the grosbeaks come. They eat rose-breasted grosbeaks, and they're always at the feeder. Some places get them like 4 or 5 at a clip, which is really neat.
Yeah.
Things are starting to come. It's going to get hectic. And one of the things that I think makes birding so hard is that you hear so much, and if you don't know where to start to identify it, you don't know where to start.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it is. And if you see something and you don't know what it is by its shape or its behavior, you don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. So people have to actually practice a little. And my next week's letter is going to deal with birds, and I've given a couple of websites. All About Birds is a good one. And What Bird? All About Birds is Cornell, and that's got a lot of good information. So I said to people, just pick a few birds, learn them, and identify them out in the wild, and go for it, and do it a little bit every year. That's what it takes.
Yeah, let's talk about that next on where you can find some information. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is outdoor education with Catskill Forest Association President Mike Porter. Okay, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but we're talking about outdoor education with Catskill Forest Association President Mike Porter. So, Mike, if someone wants to find information for kids especially, or yourself, you know, on information on identifying you know, flowers, birds, whatnot, plants.
Yeah, you know, when I was prepping for one of these articles, I've done some wildflower identification. There's a book called Newcomb's Wildflower Guide that works really good if you have the book. If you don't have the book, there's a site, and I'm just looking at it. It's realtimerendering.com. That's the name of it, realtimerendering.com. And I was impressed with the site. It was it's like the question and answer type thing, like the dichotomous key, only simpler.
Yeah.
And it did wildflowers. It did birds. It did trees. And one of the things that makes it a little bit tough right now is a lot of the wildflowers and trees, you've got to know the number of petals. You've got to know the branch arrangement, the buds, what they look like, whether they're furry or not, color. And some of the things aren't ready yet.
Right.
So it's a good way to get started, and you can practice. You can find a picture of something and key it out and make sure you get to the right spot. Hmm. It's always an adventure, you know, because you get some vocabulary that's a little tough. But the more you do it, the easier it becomes. For birds, I don't have a smartphone. In fact, I got a story to tell. My brother is retired, and he called. I made a floor for my sister-in-law out of cherry, and I had real thin stock left from when I got done. So I took it all to my brother. He's always doing things for me, so I keep him in lumber. And he called one day. He says, "You guys have a smartphone?" And I said, I texted or emailed him back. Yeah, Becky has a smartphone. And I have a dumb phone. Because I can't handle a smartphone. So in the mail, a couple days later, I get this thing made out of this thin cherry, and it's a cell phone holder. And there's two packages. One says smartphone, and the other says dumb phone. And it might be a little, you're not supposed to say dumb. But anyway, the smartphone thing is put together, and the phone sits up on it, and you can be hands-free. The dumb phone packet was like six pieces of wood, and they were all the same cherry, but they were all different sizes.
Yeah.
So I said, "What the heck?" So I called my brother up and left a message. I said, "David, what do I do with this? How do I make a dumb phone holder?"
Yeah. How does that work?
I said, "Well," he emailed me back the detailed instructions. Take out the pieces, arrange them in order of size. They're all different. And then one by one, throw them in the fire. So he was busting on me.
Oh, he's clever, huh?
Yeah, he was clever.
Yeah, he really waited for that.
Yeah, he did. He's been waiting a long time to do that.
Man, he reeled you right in on that one.
He did.
Huh?
I said, "What the heck?" Yeah, but it made for a good laugh amongst family. But anyway, with getting back to identifying things.
Right.
I don't have a smartphone, but there are apps on the smartphone. That's where this whole digression started. There are apps where you can actually record bird song that you hear, and it'll tell you what it is.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Or take a picture of a bird, and it'll tell you what it is.
Yeah.
I don't have that.
Yeah.
But I've studied. You have to study otherwise. And there are two really good sites. One is called All About Birds, and that's a Cornell University website, their lab of ornithology. And they're world-renowned for their recordings, their sound recordings. They have some of the best sound recordings going. And they have really up-to-date range maps and behavioral descriptions and things, and that's a good site. Also, when you get to All About Birds, there are links to webcams. And there's a webcam at the Lab of Ornithology that's a bird feeder. And they have several bird feeders, and behind it there's a pond. So you can put it on, and you can see what's there. And sometimes when I'm doing something, if I'm actually writing something, and there's not much going on at my feeders, I put that on my computer and go to full screen, and it's like having the birds. There's microphones, so you hear them. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty neat site. And then there's one in Ontario. And it's really neat to go to the Ontario one because, especially this year, the northern migrants that sometimes show up in the Catskills didn't come south. There was plenty of food up there. So the only way to see pine siskins and red poles and pine grosbeaks and evening grosbeaks was to go on the webcam.
Really?
Because they didn't come south. And the prediction was, based upon food supply, it's done in, like, October. There's a guy that does it. I can't remember his name. And all the bird organizations put out the winter finch forecast. And he was spot on this year. There was nothing.
So they, what about elevation? Doesn't matter either.
Nope.
It's more north-south.
Yeah, more north. It's just north-south.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Huh. So that site's really good, and I enjoy that site. The other one is WhatBird at whatbird.com, and that's very similar. I use either of them if I'm – depending on what I'm doing. But they both work real well for learning about bird species. And they have the songs, and learning songs of birds is tough. A lot of times there are – I guess I have to use the word inflections in the song that help you understand or help you know where to begin looking.
Yeah.
And the best example I have of that, Becky was working at Tuscarora Club for a while. One of the caretakers was sick, so she was helping out in the kitchen. And she heard a bird singing in the trees outside the kitchen. And she didn't know what it was. She came home. She tried to explain it to me. Says, I listened to all your tape and I can't find it. So I said, well, record it for me. So she took the tape recorder up and recorded it. And the first phrase I heard, I said, that's a flycatcher. She says, how do you know that? I said, it's the way it's talking. You know,
right.
It's just something that you learn. So we went to the flycatchers, and sure enough, there it was, olive-sided flycatcher.
Yeah.
So there's that certain amount of practice that comes into things. And I have trouble year to year remembering some songs. So I have a tape right in my truck.
Yeah.
It's not a tape anymore. It's a CD. But I play that, and I listen to all the birds of the day, basically. The warblers coming through in a couple weeks, the thrushes. And you have to practice.
What's the one that's like yellow? I get that one a lot. I don't know my birds that well unless they – I used to know them by their songs more because we had to in school.
Yeah, when you first came here, you knew something.
But I've lost even that.
Yeah.
Now I can't even say I know that anymore. It's a small yellow bird.
Goldfinch?
It might be.
Yeah. There were lots of them around this winter.
Okay.
If you had feeders out, you had goldfinches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty, yeah.
Yeah, they are. And they're getting their yellow color now, so they're molting, and the yellow feathers are coming in. So you know the males from the females. There are other places to go. I can't read this over the air. It's too long. But there's an eagle's nest in Iowa, Decorah, Iowa. And it's a webcam. There's a live webcam on the nest. And the one thing about eagles, they're like a month into their nesting right now here. They laid their eggs in March. So they're feeding young in the nest. They're not very big yet, maybe, but they're feeding young. If you look at, like, Decorah or you go to Florida to a live cam, there's full-size young eagles. And one of the most impressive times I saw it was a recording because I wasn't watching it live, but the nest had been snowed on, and it was like a foot and a half of snow. And the camera, they showed the snippet online, and all of a sudden you see the snow start to shake. And out from under that foot and a half of snow comes an eagle shaking to get the snow off. She's been sitting on that nest all night, never moved, and kept that egg warm.
Amazing.
Or eggs warm. Yeah, yeah. It was really cool. And it really was kind of a hit. Lots and lots and lots of people looked at it.
Yeah, sure.
You get to see them bringing in the fish and tearing the fish up and things like that. It's cool. Huh.
No kidding. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but tonight's topic is outdoor education with Catskill Forest Association's president, Mike Porter, basically talking about things to do while a lot of us are, around home in our properties a lot more than we're used to. So Okay. What about identifying trees?
Trees? That one site that I mentioned before, the rent. Gotta go back.
Arborday.com. You mentioned that. Tree Musketeers?
I didn't mention that one. I found realtimerendering.com had a pretty good site. I looked at Arbor Day, and I found it not to be as simple to use.
Yeah.
Again, it was vocabulary heavy. And if they're vocabulary heavy, then you have to learn the vocabulary.
Right.
It's like the fruit and twig guide that you probably used in college. Yeah. It's like you need a PhD to read it. They're really hard. Know Your Trees is a good one. That's a 4-H book. But online, you can probably find, I'm sure Arbor Day would be a decent one if you practiced. The real-time rendering I found to be fairly easy. And especially if you have a sample of whatever you're looking at in front of you. And it's wildflowers, birds, and trees.
And what about collecting stuff?
Oh, collecting? I'm a collector from way back.
So what's your process in collecting specimens?
Well, it all depends on what you're collecting.
Yeah.
Right now I'm collecting wood scraps.
Wood scraps?
Yeah.
What kind of wood scraps?
Well, I do some woodworking, and I save all my scraps in case I need them for something. I needed them this year. I burned them for sapwood. But, I did a wood collection. It was mostly a twig collection. There were an inch and a half to diameter branches of trees or trunks of trees. And I found a display method through 4-H where you did a longitudinal cut on the wood, seasoned them real well so they didn't split, longitudinal cut, and then a cross cut so you could see the grain in those different aspects. And I had that. I did all the local trees I could find. And my biggest regret is that I started traveling to add to it. I wanted to get I had three boards. So it's sitting at the CFA office on the porch. I wanted to get it filled up, so I put some stuff in there that I shouldn't have put in. I feel like I hate to use the word bastardized the local trees because I brought stuff in that.
Like what? Like, give me an example.
Ailanthus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Catalpa. I mean, there's catalpa around.
But yeah.
They're not. That's not. Yeah, that's not right. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. Yeah. There was only two or three.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was fun. And I had it in school for all the last 20 years I taught. And then I retired and left it, figuring somebody's going to get something out of this. Well, last year I decided, you know, I'm doing enough with CFA. I want that to be a part of CFA. So I went to school and saw the teacher. He says, yeah, I'm not using that. So he got it out for me, and it was covered with 16 years of dust.
Man.
So it hadn't been touched. And I had a couple of tree cookies that were like that. I had an oak tree cookie that I had sanded and oiled to keep it nice, and I had all the rings were really visible, and then a Norway spruce from the school property done like that. Yeah. Someone had taken the oak. But the Norway spruce, again, I brought to CFA because it's really nice to tell a story about a tree by looking at the tree rings. That's a pretty good study.
Yeah, sure.
So I collected those. For a while, I did photography back in the film days, and that was a very expensive way to make pictures because you would have to take 10 or 15 pictures and change the exposure and to get one good picture.
Yeah, sure.
Now with the digital cameras, they're like my dumb phone. They do whatever that you want them to do without you thinking about it. You can get really good photography. And if you go on Facebook, there are some people around that are doing really, really great stuff with photography because they can take a mess of pictures and get one good one.
Hmm. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is outdoor education with Catskill Forest Association Board President Mike Porter.
Starry night, paint your palette blue and gray. look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills, sketch the trees and the daffodils, catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. Starry, starry night, flaming flowers that brightly blaze, swirling clouds in violet haze reflect in Vincent's eyes of china blue, colors changing hue. Morning fields of amber grain, weathered faces lined in pain, are soothed beneath the artist's loving hand. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now, for they could not love you, but still your love was true. And when no hope was left in sight on that starry, starry night, you took your life as lovers often do. But I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you. Starry, starry night, portraits hung in empty halls, frameless heads on nameless walls, with eyes that watch the world and can't forget, like the strangers that you've met. The ragged men in ragged clothes, a silver thorn, a bloody rose, lie crushed and broken on the virgin snow. Now I think I know what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they're not listening still. Perhaps they never.
All right, Don McLean. You mentioned daffodils. I saw some daffodils today that were flowering near Margaretville. They were so wide open, I thought they were fake.
Really?
Man.
The daffodils are really nice right now, except the snow the other day beat them down a little bit. And then the cold this morning, all our blooms were kind of tipped over and almost down on the ground.
Well, these ones a mile outside of the village were so wide open and bright and brilliant, I literally had to go turn around and look at them because I thought someone
stuck some plastic ones in.
And I said, no, those aren't fake.
No.
Amazing.
Yep.
But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but I have here Mr. Mike Porter from the Catskill Forest Association. He's the president there, talking about outdoor education, things you can do by yourself or with the kids or whatnot, you know, around your property or down the road.
Yeah, one of the things that I wrote about was a plant press, like to do leaves and blossoms. I had a plant press. I built it myself out of slats, and I used probably $20 worth of screws and bolts, or nuts, rather, to make it. Yeah. And I'm not even sure where it is now, but I found, Becky had found a little tiny one that's just a particle board with cardboard in it. And a plant press is something that you can use that'll actually, by pressing the plants and dehydrating them properly, the specimens will last a long time. A lot of the museums and a lot of the explorers carry plant presses with them. Lewis and Clark, that was one of their major things, was to collect all the plant species they found on their trip out west.
Yeah, amazing.
John Muir had a plant press he carried with him all the time. I'm sure John Burroughs had one too. And they don't have to be big. You just have to collect smaller specimens. But the big ones you can collect, you can put blotter paper in, and you can actually do whole plants, roots and everything. So some of the things like that are pretty neat. And then you can identify them and display them, and yeah, that's pretty cool, really.
I remember doing that in sixth grade.
Yeah, I haven't done one in a while, but the kids did them in 4-H, so you helped them, and that was nice. And then one of the more modern collections we have is a trail cam. We put our trail cam out, and we get all sorts of things. First time we put one out, John was doing something when he was an intern, and he said, "Can I put a trail cam up at your place?" So I said, "Sure." So he ends up getting the neighbor kids coming down and seeing it, and they dance in front of it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So yeah,
they danced in front of it, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, there's some adults on there, too?
That was a different location.
Oh, yeah.
That was prompted. Yeah. We had one streaker.
Yeah. Right.
But anyway, this last year, Becky got a deer, and she butchered it and took everything to camp and set up the trail cam on it. And over the course of a month, we had coyote. A deer came to even see what was there.
Yeah.
Fisher. We didn't know we had a fisher on the place. And the fisher was really regular. He came very regularly. But we had two squirrels, a red squirrel, gray squirrel, a chipmunk, bobcat quite often. Yeah. We had a lot of animals that came in, and you don't realize they're there because they're nocturnal or they're very secretive. Fox, we had a nice red fox come in.
I had a carcass behind the house, and I don't live near next to a large stream where there's fish, and a bald eagle showed up on the trail cam.
Yeah,
going after the carcass.
Oh yeah, they'll go in them high peaks to find them.
We
did that with the Golden Eagle Project. We had bald eagles showing up with the goldens. But yeah, so the trail cam gave a lot of cool insight into what was on our place, and we've had the place since 1988 or 87, so we should see some of these things. You know, we'd never seen a fisher that was new.
Yeah,
but it's cool. And the game cameras today, you can get a really inexpensive one, $30 or something. They take decent pictures. You got to aim them. You can't aim them so they're getting a lot of direct sunlight, because then they bleach out. But you can set them up so that they get decent all day photographs. You can bait them. Put a bird seed out for birds. You can put. We used some fat one time. Put some fat out and got stuff.
Yeah.
Becky took the old kale plants up and threw them out this spring, and the deer loved it. They ate it all in our garden, so they might better love it up there. So you can bait. And there's really nothing wrong with it if you're not putting out anything that's going to hurt them. It's
right.
Just, you know, and you're not doing it to shoot them. You're just doing it to see what's there. It kind of goes hand in hand. Like, if you had a place where there was some mud, this is a good time of year to do tracks, too, and you can do castings of tracks with plaster of Paris. You could set a game camera up near a mud spot. You could put something out that the animals would be attracted to, and then when they walk up in the mud, you can do tracks. And the footprints are cool.
Yeah.
You know, you can learn the gaits that the different animals have, whether they're perfect walkers or they hop or whatever. So it's really kind of, it's fun to do those kinds of collections.
Yeah, we did some of the scavenger hunt you had mentioned, and but yeah, deer tracks, yeah. Just showing a kid, especially when they're 6 years old, which way they're walking.
Yeah.
You know, the deer. Yeah,
it's a good conversation piece. It opens up, and for you, it's every day. You know, that's your life is being out. But some of the people that are doing this are not really out all the time. They're kind of captive here because of the virus issue.
Yeah.
So it's a good way to start conversations. It's a good way to maybe pique interest. And I feel really good about it.
It gets you to pay attention.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I pay attention a lot more ever since you do maple sugaring during that time of year, whereas before I couldn't tell you what the weather was like for a long time.
Yep.
Until I started making syrup, and then you start paying attention to the temperatures, the highs and the lows every single day, and the wind. And
you realize, like you've been doing especially, is that trees are different.
Yeah.
You know, there's good trees and there's not so good trees.
Right.
So, and you don't realize that unless you take the maple syruping a step further.
Right.
You know, most people don't do that. If anybody has pipeline, there's no way that they can do that. So with the buckets, you can, and I've done a little bit of it myself.
Yeah.
You can really get to know your trees in a way that's really pretty neat. You know, realize that there's a big variation in trees.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've written about it, but I think, you know, with tubing and stuff, obviously it's the way to go commercially, you know, on a bigger scale, but I think that's the reason why back in the 1800s they had higher sugar contents. I now think it's not because of weather. I think it's because they managed their sugar bushes with more spacing.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have reverse osmosis.
Yeah.
And because I've seen it. I mean, in the woods where they're so close together, 1.5-2% tops.
Yeah.
Whereas the trees that are in the wide open with 20 feet or 30 feet of space, and they're, you know, it's average that they're 2.5%.
Yeah, I did that this year. I gathered my sap in milk cans, and I tested every milk can.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I'd average it at the end to see what my average content was, and my trees that are in the woods were 1.5 to maybe 2%, just like you said. I had one tree this year that was doing 2.9.
2.9?
Yeah, every day, 2.9. And last year, I had one that was 4%.
Last year was crazy.
It was nuts.
Yeah, best year I've ever had.
Yeah, that's a level of understanding of your trees that most people don't get a chance to do.
Yeah.
And with smaller amounts of buckets and things, you can do it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
You can go out and test them all.
And these are things that people can do on a small scale. And there's not a big investment to get the equipment to test the sugar. I mean, you can buy a refractometer for $20.
Is that what they are now?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, well, you can get it's. I don't know if it's the best one, but you can get one for $20. And that's what I have.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But, yeah, it really helps you understand more about the individual trees. And we don't do enough of that. We don't learn, like, specifics about things the way we could.
Yeah, you need a reason. I mean, I need a reason. I can't speak for other people, but, you know, I need a reason sometimes to do stuff. And, you know, it's like I didn't pay attention to the stream that much until I fished.
Yeah.
Got into fishing and then saw the stream a different way, you know?
And when you're at the stream and you're fishing, and I did a lot of worm fishing when I was a kid, I took my binoculars to birdwatch.
Yeah.
And you'd be amazed at the lists of birds that I saw just sitting on a log next to the stream. You become a part of the surroundings, and they show up.
Sure.
Yeah. Becky had a chickadee land on her pole the other day.
Really?
She was fishing. She wasn't really paying much attention. And the next thing she knows, pole bobs, and she looks, and there's a chickadee on it.
Yeah. Chickadees are pretty cool.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they're always friendly. I'm up at my tree stand, they'll come in like a little group sometimes around you.
Yeah. They don't care. And that's their behavior. They move in groups foraging for bugs, and they'll come through maybe two or three times a day.
Yeah.
And they have kinglets with them and brown creepers. They're all doing the same thing. in their own little niche on the tree. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. But so what? We only got about 2 minutes left, Mike.
Holy cow.
I know. We're talking about outdoor education with Catskill Forest Association Board President Mike Porter and things to do around the house and property while you're maybe around the property a little more these days. So what do you think? What do you want to leave off with?
I think I want to leave off with the woodcock.
Okay.
The woodcock is a cool bird. It's a kind of a sandpiper-type bird, but they are mating. Actually, we might be past it now. But if you go out at dusk in a place where there's open ground and probably some mud, and you listen, you'll hear the woodcock doing its mating ritual. And if it's not quite dark yet, you'll actually see it. Well, Becky decided this year, let's go get a woodcock. So we were at camp. We stayed up there till dark, and we drove down the road, stopped in this one spot. In 2 minutes, there was a woodcock flying up in the sky, winnowing down, trying to attract a mate. It was really cool.
Now, there's another thing that kind of does that. Is that the Ruby Crown Kinglet? Or does it sound similar? What does that sound? I'm not going to ask you to do it, but...
I can't do it.
I know.
I can't do it. The Ruby Crown Kinglet does have a call that's a little bit similar, but much more melodic and a little louder.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I am hearing woodcock then.
Yeah.
So I hear them at dusk, and it's like a... It gets faster and faster and faster.
Yeah, as they come down. Mm. They're one of their hill names is Timberdoodle.
Timberdoodle.
Yeah, so we were talking to one of our grandsons, our three-year-old, and talking about what we've been doing. We said, Benji, we saw a Timberdoodle. And can you say Timberdoodle? And he says, no, but I can say bird. So that's a good thing to
Timberdoodle
end on.
Sounds like something you call someone you don't like.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's all the time we got on From the Forest, and thanks for coming on, Mike.
Yeah, and if you're a member, keep looking for these letters. I'm going to do them as long as we're separated from everything else. If you have any ideas, you can get a hold of me through president at CFA, CatskillForest.org, I think is the email. President at CatskillForest.org. And I would take suggestions. I've used two things that my daughter has told me to do, and hopefully she's listening. And because she's working from home, she should be able to hear it. But anyway, I'll do about anything. And I really enjoy being on the radio. I enjoy what I'm doing with CFA. It takes me maybe an hour and a half a week to do one of these things. Some of them are a little bit more time consuming, but I have the time. Why not do it?
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on, Mike. And,
sure, it's my pleasure.
See you next week.
Always a pleasure.
All right. Have a good night.
Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of the long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.